Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
The following is an Auburn Network production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello and welcome in. It is the Wednesday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio at the controls. Bill Cameron may be joining us for some or all of this show, as he has a personal appointment. Drew is off today for personal reasons as well, but fear not. Our usual Wednesday guest is here for the first hour of the show, our good buddy Jason Caldwell, and it's always great to see JC, but a lot to talk about. Lots changed. For June, a lot has changed since the last time we got to visit with Jason Caldwell, and it's great to see you here in the studio today. Jason, how you doing?
I'm good. Just dealing with some kind of little summer cold or something, so I got a few cough drops with me, so should be able to power through this one and get rolling. But yeah, you're right. It's a different time. It's a different world we're living in, and obviously the house settlement, it got passed, but now the lawsuits start. And so what does that mean moving forward? I don't know.
Sounds like schools are still going to pay, distribute revenue in the face of these lawsuits.
They've now backed the date where you have to declare whether you're going to do it or not till June 15th, because schools can choose not to do this, I guess. I don't know why. I don't know how that works.
So we talked about that a little bit yesterday. I'm under the impression that because the power conference schools were defendants in the lawsuit,
all of them are in.
I don't think it's optional at the SEC, ACC, Big 10, or Big 12 level.
I think it's going to be the other schools somewhere down the line. Somebody's going to go, hey, we can't do that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a question of mid-majors, and I know the Ivy League is not opting in among some others, and there are some schools that are – I know there are some other conferences that are requiring an opt-in with a minimum amount of money that they want distributed. They're not necessarily telling everyone to hit the 20.5 – I think it's the American Conference – where they're not expecting members to all hit the $20.5 million number. Mm-hmm. But I think the expectation is that if you want to stay in good standing in that conference, you have to pay at least $10 million in revenue sharing. And then, of course, I think that the $20.5 million, I think the question for the larger conference schools, especially the ones that envision themselves as championship caliber in football or men's basketball, the question isn't, are we going to spend the $20.5 million? It's, how do we raise legitimate NIL opportunities so that we can – On top of that $20.5 million, have money, because that's the thing that I think people like. Yes, there's a $20.5 million salary cap, but there's also the opportunity, if you were a corporation or a very rich person involved in NIL in the past, you can still be involved with a school with NIL opportunities. It's just you have to actually get your money's worth. If you're going to give, if you're going to give, hey, Bill Cameron.
I'm sorry, I was in, I wasn't in, I'm in.
If it was the Hokey Pokey, if Corporation X, headed up by someone who really cares about a particular athletic department, if they want to give, if they want to enter into a $500,000 or $1 million NIL partnership with a school, the important thing is they have to be getting $500,000 or $1 million.
Yeah, it's got to be approved by the clearinghouse.
In order to pass the clearinghouse, you have to actually be getting your money's worth. It can't just be.
You might not get your money's worth anyway, but it has to be a legitimate.
Yep. Has to be something the clearinghouse says is legit.
Yeah, if it's here's the thing. I think the days of, well, this high school kid who was at some small school, now all of a sudden, now if it's Arch Manning and you know that name, then you're probably still going to get your money's worth out of that one.
But a player like Arch Manning, keep in mind, probably has NIL opportunities no matter where he goes.
It doesn't matter.
And another important thing about this settlement is players can still negotiate their own legitimate NIL opportunities. They just can't be, you know, they
still have to get approved.
They have to be approved, but they can't just be, okay, well, in exchange for participating with this specific team, you're going to get X amount of money. But promotional opportunities
Anything over $600
has to pass the.
The intent
for clearinghouse
has to pass the smell test.
Yeah.
I mean, that was what the intent was in the first place with NIL. But Jason, we were talking about this yesterday, and I'm seeing comments from people nationally saying, "Well, you know, top Power Four quarterbacks are still going to be $2 to $4 million." I don't know that there are that many legit $2 to $4 million NIL deals available for as many schools as want to contend.
Could a school be in the business of spending 10% of their $20.5 million
on
cap
player?
on a guy who's presumed to be, because we're talking about stars now. Like if you're a guy if the market says you're one of the 5 or 10 best quarterbacks in college football, does it make economic sense for us, and you're in the portal?
Well,
does it make economic sense for a school to spend 10% of its $20.5 million cap on you?
Here's the thing, and I talked to somebody
that
today.
Could be maybe.
And here's the thing. Here's the thing you don't know though. How much is it going to cost to keep the guys you have on your current team?
Yeah.
And how much money of that do you already have tied up? Because that's going to be the thing.
Right. Well, and that's where in the same thing in the same comments that I saw about quarterbacks getting that, it said, but that money can't be coming from the revenue sharing or
it can, but it,
or
but
you won't, but you won't be able to compete if you're doing
correct.
If you're spending that kind of money on a player.
Yeah, so if you have 20.5 is the total
for every athlete,
revenue sharing
for everybody you have.
Yep.
And so if you're going, even if there's 90% of that going to football, which I don't think you're going to have somebody going to 90. Now they'll be closer, but I don't. So you start thinking about, okay, you're under $20 million. And if you go $2 million to a quarterback.
Of your 14 or 15, yeah, which is what.
Give you 16. We'll give you 16 million. You go have $14 million left to go the rest of that roster.
For 84 other players.
Yeah, it's only going to be 60, my guess is.
Receiving revenue sharing money?
My guess is that the bottom half of that roster, they're going to go,
scholarship.
You're at Auburn. You got a scholarship. That's it.
If you can get a better deal, that's why the portal
is here's,
still.
Here's the other thing we were wondering about. What about those guys that work their way up, that really improve and move up? Then you're having to renegotiate deals
correct.
With the guys that you've had to pay them more.
That's it. And so you start to – that's why it's really, really difficult.
It is crazy to think about. I think
– Auburn has done a good job, and it's something I'm going to try to write on a little bit tomorrow, but they're treating this like an NFL roster to where you go, how much money do you spend on positions? Now, the NFL, you go, if you have Saquon Barkley, you can spend a lot on a running back. If you don't, you're probably not going to spend – you're going to spend less than 10% of your whole budget on the running back position. That's life. Offensive guard, maybe even safety – I don't know. There's going to be some positions that are going to be premier. Obviously, quarterback, offensive tackle, wide receiver, pass rusher, corner, just like the NFL draft.
I'm interested to see. Apparently, there was talk. I know Greg Sankey said something to Destin about the idea. Maybe this was back in February that the per sport caps had been discussed, and there were some folks who were really strongly opposed to putting a limit on how much of your $20 million can go to men's basketball, or how much of it can go to
women's basketball
or baseball.
Right.
And I can't help but wonder if we're going to see some schools really prioritizing sports other than football and making it tough for schools that are also trying to win in football to be top level schools in things like, I mean, I can't imagine, we're talking about like 75% of a 20, the average power conference school could be spending 75% of their $20 million on football. Will Duke spend 75%? Will Kansas? Will UConn?
I don't think UConn will. Because
the Big East is operating under a different set.
I think from a football perspective, they're not making as much money on football as maybe other schools would. If it is that much of your budget, I just don't see how you start going, well, we're going to take that away. And if you don't win in football, men's basketball probably can keep you afloat in some instances. Maybe. It's still going to be difficult.
You better have a championship history.
After that, you can put – I mean, South Carolina has won a bunch. They put a bunch of people in the stands. They don't make money when it's basketball. You go, well, you're going to give that much more money. Well, how many more people can you get in there? No.
How much more money is it going to bring in?
That's it.
It better be bringing – if you're going to spend more money – then it needs to. There needs to be a return on
that. Tennessee, LSU, and South Carolina would be the schools where I would think they would have a tougher decision to make regarding carving out a piece of the pie for women's basketball than other schools in the conference, just because of either who's currently coaching there or the history of those
think
programs.
About Tennessee, you go, okay, where are you taking it from?
I know.
And that's where it comes from everywhere. You go, like, where are you taking that from? And it comes down to that, like,
recent national, reigning national champion in baseball.
How are you taking that? Who are you taking it from? And I don't think it's going to come from baseball and softball. We talked about this, and it's a bridge that's going to happen, and it's going to get crossed. The other sports, they're going to take it from those other sports if that happens. And you're going to see schools go, well, there's less of those opportunities for this side. Maybe there's no more men swimming. We just have women's. I think it's going to happen in some instances, and especially at smaller schools. I think we're going to start seeing that down the road, which is really interesting because House, what sport was it?
It was swimming, right? He's a swimmer. And a women's basketball player, Sonona was the other one. But I think it would be disappointing, especially when you consider the broadcast deals. It would be disappointing if the major conference schools decided to start cutting scholarship sports. They may do it. I know there's a lot of concern
It's hard to imagine that if things don't change that they wouldn't
now Charlie
have to trim some.
Charlie Baker said, like, right now his understanding is that none of the defendant conferences plan on cutting a scholarship sport right now. That was the assurance.
We haven't even started it yet.
And he also was very quick to single out the defendant conferences. Not the mid majors, not Division II. Like, I think there could be the expectation that it's going to be tougher to keep all of your scholarship sports.
Yeah.
When you start working further down, down levels.
Yeah, and you know, it's one of those things.
And that's too bad.
And it's one of those things where I listen to some national radio and listen to guys, and they're like, hey, glad these, you know, they finally get a piece of it, and I'm all for that. But then the flip side is like, you know, how's this going to work because they're not employees. And yeah, they've got it as good as you can get it because they got all the money and none of the problems right now. You're going to have to cross that bridge too. Like, if you're getting paid and you're getting this money and you're doing these things, there has to be a return because, if you're paying folks, they're getting a scholarship already, all that stuff stays. Do you still pay for meals? Do you still pay for housing? I mean, like,
at some point,
somebody's going to go, hey, why are we doing all this?
Yeah, I mean, if you're getting that money, we need to take that back so that we have the money to be able to pay
other people.
Right.
CBS quoted an anonymous administrator in one of their stories this week that wondered, like, well, if revenue sharing comes to sports like this, we're paying these amounts of money, like, why are three square meals a day also part of the also part? And I do wonder if schools could look at, what you call it, overhead? Like, schools could look at some of the accoutrements that have been provided to college athletes and wonder about that while they're deciding, you know, how to you know, what to do about
that's perfectly reasonable.
What to do about their budgets.
I mean, perfectly reasonable. If on top of the your school you're getting money on, you know, then that money should cover whatever you need.
Ultimately, the hope is, and I don't think I'm too far from Jason on this, where it's like, ultimately the hope is, you know, John Cohen has repeatedly pointed out the benefit of the $20.5 million is a level playing field as opposed to teams going above and beyond in specific sports and blowing away the competition with what they spend. Like, a level playing field that doesn't, like, hamper the economic opportunities of the players, I feel like, is probably ultimately like the thing. Like let the players get their fair share with a level playing field is probably the best thing if you can get there. Like a level playing field that
there is no level playing field.
Yeah,
it's never going to happen. And if they're like, you can give everybody $20.5 million. There's still going to be schools that go, heck, we're still going. I don't care how $600. No, that ain't happening. We'll figure out a way to do it something different. And that's the way it's always been. And it's always going to be that
well,
way.
Well, how are they going? I guess it's still up for the question I still have is with regard to like the CSC. Like if a player enters into an agreement with a booster or a company for a, you know, a back channel deal and does not tell the school about it, how's the CSC going to find out? Like what's their like if the player doesn't
the same way the NCAA used to find out about things.
Yeah, I mean
sometimes.
That's what I mean. I mean, it doesn't mean that they will find out.
And that comes back to my point.
Yeah, I think
it's going to happen.
I think deals that are reported to the school will eventually make their way to the clearinghouse. Yeah. My question is, there will be deals that aren't reported. Yeah,
to the
I wonder how many of these
bank that.
I wonder 1,000%.
Wonder how many of these deals aren't going to make it across that bridge?
Yeah,
right.
All of them. Yep. And that's it. And like, I mean, how much enforcement does the NCAA have right now? I think very little.
And how does the CSC, even with enforcement powers, how are they going to prove that a player and a company or a boost? I don't know. Like I do wonder about. Like it sounds great until you get into some of those enforcement questions.
Yes,
I agree. All right, we're just underway here on the Wednesday Drive. Bill, Dan at the controls,
right,
and Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover. We'd love for you to join in. You can call us on the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. That number is 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
So come on in and join us here on the Wednesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck.
Thanks, Auburn Opelika, for voting.
More of The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
We're back. Welcome back into the Drive here on this Wednesday afternoon. Another nice day. I was thinking we're in for a lot of rain this week, and maybe we'll get some. But last couple of days have been pretty nice. So I hope everybody is doing well. We're here cool and comfortable in the studio. Bill, Dan, Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover. All right, JC, I've had people go, all right, well, everything's about done now. I guess everybody can just take off for the summer, right?
No, not quite. maybe next week, and that's the plan next week.
Good.
So, but no, right now it is. I think there's 6 official visitors on campus
right now.
There'll be a couple of camps still to happen, and then more official visits this weekend, and then it'll start to slow down as you get towards the dead period. Actually, doesn't start till the 23rd, but I think for Auburn it's going to start a little earlier. From the coaching standpoint, it won't be dead. They'll still be on the phones. They'll be doing those. But I think the official visit period is going to end for them after this weekend. So, I know still plenty going on. You got baseball portal that opened last Monday that's been pretty busy so far. Football, recruiting, and this time now for the next 4 or 5 days will be pretty busy.
Yeah, there's no question about it. In basketball, I mean, they're working out, trying to get to know each other, learn each other. Definitely want to talk some baseball. I mean, a rough way, a disappointing end for the Tigers as Coastal Carolina, Jason. I mean, we told people, I mean, they are a legit team. They have the pitching staff that can win this thing.
Yeah.
I think they do.
I think there'd be a difficult matchup out there at TD Ameritrade. It's a bigger ballpark. Mm-hmm. They've got a pretty good outfield. The way they pitch it, I think they'll be a team that will have a legitimate chance.
They're sound fundamentally. They have good approaches offensively. A little bit of a surprise that they hit 4 homers on Friday against Auburn because they're not known for that. But I mean, you make a mistake, they've got a couple of guys that can hit it. But they have pretty good approaches. They know how to produce runs as well. So
yeah.
I mean. It was just it was a tough break for Auburn.
Yep.
They caught a Coastal Carolina team, and Samuel Dutton just didn't have his best stuff on Friday night.
Yeah, and you know you had opportunities on Friday night to win.
Opportunity after opportunity.
Some opportunities on Saturday. I wrote about it. I thought that both offenses were really sluggish Saturday. Only mm-hmm. one extra base hit, and it was a double between both teams on Saturday.
I felt like it. I mean, after you played late on Friday,
1 a.m., it was 1:09.
Ton of pressure on Auburn's offense to come out on Saturday, too, after dropping the game Friday night and knowing that Coastal's got their ace going.
You knew that whoever lost that game Friday, it was going to be really, really tough. Because if Coastal had lost, it would have snapped that winning streak and put all the pressure on them. Instead, it put that pressure on Auburn.
Yeah, and pitched really well. In the end, it was, had an opportunity in the ninth, lining to a double play after having first, second, nobody out, lining to a double play in the tenth, and then on a Saturday, no score. A tie game. You have a play at first on a swinging bunt, wild pitch. You look up, and that's the difference. But that's how I thought they were two pretty evenly matched teams, and it's the unfortunate part of tournament settings that you have, because Auburn played one of the best teams in the field, in my opinion. And you look, I talked to a few folks that talked to people at Florida State, and they're like, this is the unfortunate part of it. Florida State was really good in the ACC all year. They were better than Louisville. They're better than Duke.
But they Louisville had to go
hosts
to State.
Louisville hosts a super regional. Duke hosts a super regional. Florida State has to go to Oregon State and play till midnight. That's the part of it that doesn't feel like it's right. But for Auburn, you had.
You think
chances.
They should reseed before super regionals?
I don't know. It would be hard. I think it would be a possibility to do. But it's a tournament where you throw it in there, and that's part of the luck of the draw. And same thing happens in basketball. Alabama makes a Final Four a few years ago and didn't play a seed that was a single-digit seed till they got to the Final Four.
Reseeding in the Super Regional round would be interesting. I mean, the thought of all right, we're going to take a look and rank the teams 1 through 16.
Well, to do that, though, you need to and I've said this, I think the first thing you do, you need to seed 1 to 32. If you're going to stick with this, I think it needs to be seeded 1 to 32. And other than conference versus conference where you can flip two, they need to go 1 to 32, one place 32, two place 31, and try to go, hey, it wouldn't guarantee anything, but hey, I don't care where it is. I don't care if you're 31 and you're Washington State and two is Miami. That's the matchup we're playing. And I wish they would – that would be a possible thing. Once you get past 32, it would be pretty
it'd
tough
be really
to do
difficult.
After that.
And then we can talk in a little while. I know we got Uncle Ollie, so let's go ahead and get to the phones. Then we'll talk some more, because Butch had some interesting comments about regionals as well. But let's get to the Drive hotline, and Uncle Ollie's been hanging on for a few minutes. Hey, Uncle Ollie.
Always good to talk to you, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call.
That's what we're here for.
Yeah, man. First of all, I'm not so sure. Maybe Arkansas, but I'm not so sure anybody else can hang with Coastal. Those guys, that when you have a pitching staff like that, that's going to be a hard out.
Yeah, I think it gives them a good bet. I think the LSU-Arkansas first game, because of the starting pitching for both, is going to be an interesting matchup, too.
I was floored by the way they swung the bats, for a team that came in with only 61, 62 homers in 62 games.
Yeah, but they had eight guys that hit .280 or better. I mean, they're solid throughout the lineup.
They were putting
– my goodness – their catcher is a big time.
I saw an infographic about Bonine today where it's like, or Bonine, whatever it is.
Say his name.
I think it's Bodine. I think Bodine's were the band from the 90s, but the Bodine was, and it's different called strikes he's had this year, like a collage of them. And on top of what he gives you with the bat.
He's great at framing pitches and being able to just slightly be able to get that glove back into the strike zone.
I thought
he was really good at that.
Yeah. Answer me this. And I'm sure there's – listen, I'm all for Butch. But I will never understand why we took Griffin Graves out.
Because that's the most pitches he's thrown this year, and you kind of get to those things where you try to get to your guy. Matchups, second time through the order. There's lots of things that happen in a coaching situation.
Yeah, in hindsight, it's really difficult to understand. But the game was
the bottom of the ninth.
Yeah,
that wasn't the game to me. The game was in the bottom of the ninth when you didn't score, in my opinion.
You had all the momentum. You had all the momentum going to the bottom of the ninth. You get the first two guys on. I mean, that's where the game was lost.
I thought the second guess, to be clear, Uncle Ollie, I would have liked to see Myers a little earlier in relief of Dutton, right? Like, I thought maybe that was the move, just like they did in the Stetson game.
You mean an out earlier, maybe?
Maybe an out or two earlier, yeah.
You're not going to bring him a whole lot earlier, maybe an out, which would have been
We were concerned in the previous inning. I mean, yes. I know you needed four out of Dutton, but in the third inning, I mean, look, and that's sort of what I'm talking about with the Coastal offense. There were some loud outs, like early in that game.
I told my son, we're playing with fire. We're playing with fire. If we don't score some runs, we're asking for it. But the best news I got today was that Dre's coming back.
Yeah, Alvarez.
Yes.
Yeah. No. I think for the most part that group will stick together and stay together. And so, I think you look at him and Chatterton. I think those guys are potential weekend guys, and with some of the folks you've added. You know, I think Ryan Hetzler, who was Auburn's closer this year, I think will get a shot to be a starter next year. I think that's probably more of his role.
Yeah.
A really interesting pitching staff with some of the additions you have, too.
So, who's the kid that got hurt that
– Connor Gatwood.
Yeah.
Yep.
What's his status?
He's pitching in New England. I talked to him. He was actually here for the regional because school was already out. He wasn't on the roster. He came and watched a game, and he was headed to Atlanta to the airport. He's pitching in, like, the New England Collegiate League or something like that. And so I think, you know, he missed almost his entire senior season with an injury and then got injured here. And so he was just so far behind that I think now they want him to go pitch. Just go get some innings this summer, see what it looks like. So far, I haven't heard anything that changes my mind that he plans to be back. So I think right now that's the case.
Okay. Well, I know you're the music guy. I guess you heard Brian Wilson died today.
Yeah, we saw that.
We were going to talk a little more about that in the second hour probably. Yeah. But, yeah, sad news.
Interesting.
About...
I mean, and then Brian yesterday on Monday on his musings had Wilson Phillips, which has, of course, two of his daughters.
Yeah. And what's crazy, the oldest brother dies last.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is that Dennis, who was the only one that really surfed, dies by drowning.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I saw a clip I'd never seen before from it was from the 70s, and I guess there was some sort of Beach Boys NBC special, and Belushi and Dan Aykroyd dress as police officers and force Brian Wilson to get out of bed and go surfing because he'd never been surfing before, and they act like the surf police or whatever. It's a funny little sketch. The movie about Brian Wilson from a couple of years ago, the one with John Cusack. and the Paul Dano and Giamatti as Landy is excellent. Love and Mercy, if folks have not seen the biopic.
At the time, Good Vibrations was the most expensive record or song ever produced.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the day, of course, their big rivals was the Beatles.
Yep.
And so Brian was always trying to, whatever the Beatles did, he wanted to one up them. That was his thing. But anyway, always good to talk to you guys.
Great stuff, Uncle Ollie.
All right.
334-321-1390. We'll get to our bottom of the hour break. We'll talk a little more baseball before we get into. If we don't know specifics, we know generalities as far as when Auburn football games will be played.
And we learned, we were talking about this a little bit before the show, we also learned about the SEC-ACC Challenge today and who's matched up in those games this upcoming season as well.
So stick with us. As a matter of fact, come on in and join us here on the Wednesday Drive. Welcome back into the drive here on this Wednesday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Jason Caldwell from Auburn into cover. Before we move off of baseball, though, Jason, I asked you and just wanted for folks that were wondering, the transfer portal thus far as relates to Auburn, any additions since the five that we saw basically over the weekend?
Yeah, nothing so far. I think I had a couple of visitors. I think that'll continue here in the next couple of weeks, but had a couple of guys, I think, on campus since the weekend.
What are they looking for? Do you know?
I think they still would like another potential starting pitcher, mm-hmm. but I mean, we saw it last year. I think that's a guy you'd like to have, and then you create some competition, and then you become a middle reliever or bullpen guy, whatever it is. So, but you'd like to have a guy that could give you that option. So I think that's it. I think potential lefty first baseman outfield type to, because you're losing Ike and Cooper McMurray.
You are.
You got some guys back. You got Kay Ballou back.
And
Bub.
With Cade and Bub, you've got a couple of lefty.
But you'd like to have another one because then you're pretty right-handed heavy. I mean, you still got.
It's funny because Auburn was more lefty,
and you got Frelick too. So you got three guys still. But you'd like to have another lefty option, I think, in that role.
Mm-hmm. You think Todd Clay gets a shot at first?
I do. I think you look, and the interesting thing is going to be you add
former farmhand for the Cameron
yard guy.
Yes,
for me.
Yes. Yeah. You add Ryan Farber in, who's a middle infielder, but a guy that also he played mm-hmm. outfield as a freshman, and so you add a guy like that in. You look at Todd Clay; he could play third base.
Right.
Guevara could get a shot at shortstop potentially. Depends on how. There's still so many moving targets mm-hmm. to see who produces all those things, but you look at it and go, could you add another outfield spot? I do think Todd will get a shot at first base, yes.
All right, and then wanted to comment on what Butch said when he was talking to us before the Super Regional. Dan, I thought this was interesting. Even though Auburn has, you know, three out of four times under Butch has swept through regionals, he would much rather see it stay the same format that you're playing all year long, and then you go ahead and go into Super Regionals with a three-game best-of-three format. I just wonder, man, with 64 teams, that would take a while.
Yeah. Well, it you know, you start adding a couple of weeks, which is what you're doing. You're adding a couple of weeks in. I just wonder now, moving forward, you know, because we're already seeing them talking about it in football. I don't think here in 5 years there's going to be an SEC championship football game. There may be four games that day.
Right.
I think it could be similar in baseball where you go, hey, thanks Hoover. We're going to do this a different way now. Mm-hmm. They're going to be on campus. Now you start to think about it. We're going to start to narrow it down. Who knows? I don't think they'll change it, but I do think it's an interesting concept. The question is, then you start talking about doing the same thing when you get to Hoover. Then you get down to eight, then how much more it adds another 2 weeks in mm-hmm. Omaha. And so you start talking about adding time. I do think, though, that the baseball is a series sport.
Yes.
And you look at it and you see even in situations where you go, I mean, LSU can lose to Little Rock in the first game of a mm-hmm. regional. Will they lose two out of three to them? Probably not. And then they didn't. But you look and go one game scenario, then it changes everything about a weekend. And so I think right now it creates drama, it creates excitement. And because of that, I don't think it'll change. But I do think baseball is a series sport. Basketball is a series sport.
Yes, it is.
And you look at same thing in the basketball. You have one game scenario, you can have these upsets and things that happen, but that's why they don't play one game series in NBA, because anybody can win on that day, and especially true in baseball.
Yeah. All right, 334-321-1390. Let's get to the phone. And Yellowhammer. Hey, Yellowhammer.
Hey, afternoon. So you were talking about surfing and Brian Wilson, so I thought I'd throw in some stuff about that. I saw a YouTube video of David Letterman interviewing Brian Wilson, and he said, have you ever been surfing? And Wilson said, once. And he said, that was it. I almost got punched in the eye by my surfboard. It's just way too dangerous out there. And I was in the North Shore of Oahu. I had a friend.
My understanding is, Yellowhammer, that there was one guy in the Beach Boys who surfed. It was one of the Loves, right? Or maybe it was either Wilson's brother or one of the Loves.
No, I think it may have been Dennis.
And then the rest
Dennis
of the guys
surfed, but the rest of them
were hot rod guys. Yeah. They were car guys, and it just which it just happened that most of the best Beach Boys songs were about surfing and not the hot rods, but they did a lot of.
They had hot rod songs. Of course, they helped Jan and Dean with the hot rod songs.
But that was I think that there was more like there were some guys in the band, who loved to surf, and the rest of them were more car guys.
Well, I was on the North Shore of Oahu, and no matter where you went, every beach had signs saying "dangerous rip current, strong undertow, danger, keep out," and all that. But you'd look out there, and there's all those surfers out there, and it's just, well, there's this rolling thing where it'll just grind you into the sharp coral. It's just incredibly dangerous. And you've got to be almost like a guy, you know, who does kayaking down a raging river. You really have to know what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. In those conditions,
some,
no question.
Some of that Southern California surf culture was wild stuff, too. I saw Sean Penn give an interview lately, and I guess he was
wild surf.
He was Sean Penn was a bit of a troublemaker in the in the surf days before he got into acting.
He was a bit of a troublemaker.
And he said, if you were an outsider, you know, we'd chase you down the beach, and then we'd blow up your van. And it's like, oh, okay, that's how things.
Yep.
That's how they settled things. That's how they settled things on the sand back then.
Man. Yep. That's not a huge shock. All right. Appreciate the call, Yellowhammer, 334-321-1390. A couple of the things we were talking about. What do you want to get to? You want to talk about the SEC-ACC challenge Auburn football schedule or SEC football schedule?
A little piece of breaking news that we got earlier today about the SEC-ACC challenge. And I think there were folks that were hopeful after Auburn and Alabama drew Duke and North Carolina last year.
Yeah, that they get to host those schools.
That you might see a return visit or a rematch.
No.
Instead, and I do understand the appeal of Duke's a preseason top 10 team, Florida's the reigning national champion, and after the portal window they just had, they're probably a preseason top 5 team or so.
So why didn't Duke go on the road?
Can't explain that one.
Seemed like they were at home last year.
Did Florida have a home game last year?
I don't remember Florida's opponents in the. I mean, that remember last year that the SEC won almost every single game in the in the challenge. But yeah, matching up Duke and UNC and I think Louisville with top programs in the SEC makes sense. It's unfortunate Auburn wasn't one of the SEC teams picked. Arkansas drew Louisville. And they're going to do UNC Kentucky, which I feel like they've done
in Lexington.
They've done that quite a few times. Auburn will face a familiar foe wearing new colors.
Yeah, somebody who was in town during baseball.
As a matter of fact, a guy who knows the way. The way here.
And then for the regional.
Former LSU head coach Will Wade, now the head coach of the NC State Wolfpack, will be bringing that team to Neville Arena for SEC-ACC tournament. That's usually a November deal. Right, it's pretty early in the season, and so I mean between that and the players only tournament, which we've talked about, the Vegas tournament that Auburn joined the field for, which I believe is going to be a Thanksgiving week deal. Auburn's going to have some high profile opponents on the schedule in the first month of the season.
Yeah, don't expect it to be as rugged a schedule as last year. When you've got basically a new roster, but still, it's gonna have quite a few familiar names.
Last year, one of the more ambitious schedules I think anybody had attempted in non-conference play, because Bruce was confident he had the team that could survive it with a brand new team. Understand maybe build more of a runway going into conference play in January, but you're still going to play between. I mean, the names in that Vegas tournament are.
That field's
loaded. You could see some SEC teams early in that one as well. I mean, I think that you could even play. There aren't rules preventing conference matchups potentially in that. And then of course now you know your ACC opponent as well. It's going to be NC State.
Yeah. Florida was at home last year against Virginia, but I thought that was kind of the point of this thing when it started. That you alternated home and away.
Yeah.
And you could find a team that played on the road last year, that played at home, and You could well, do that.
That may have been the case. Maybe NC State played at home last year, but at least did that. But
Florida and Duke both played at home. So, like, well, we're going to let those teams play.
So, Florida's
play
on the road, but Duke.
But Duke gets another home game.
Gets to be at home back to back years.
To me, it makes sense to flip it where you're at home 1 year, you're on the road. You might can change opponents, but you're still going to have one in each.
And send Duke somewhere exotic that they never go or they've never been or they very rarely go.
You could have some opportunities there.
Has Duke been to Arkansas?
Yeah, whether it's Gainesville or Fayetteville or Auburn.
Was it last year or year before?
I think they've drawn them. Yeah. But still, I guess you're right. I mean, I think the other disappointing thing is that nothing against NC State. They're resetting, and Will Wade has landed some big names in the portal, including Van Allen Lubin, who we talked about as an Auburn target, who's going to be in the Wolfpack instead. But there's really no story. Right when you think about like an Auburn NC State matchup,
hey, Will Wade's coming back to the SEC.
Sure,
That's a bigger story than you got in some of these.
It would be the same story no matter where he went, though.
And it would be a bigger story if you sent him to Baton Rouge. Yeah, like if you sent him to LSU, it would be the biggest story possible. Alabama. You mentioned Virginia as a potential opponent for Auburn, which would I think be fun, even if the programs are very different than they were in the 2019.
That would create interest. Hey, these two teams played in the Final Four a few years ago.
Bruce's alma mater is in the ACC, Boston College. If you wanted to even play up that angle, you could send you could send Auburn or bring Boston College to Auburn or vice versa.
Like we said though. I don't have any faith that people that do these things really understand what they're doing and how to schedule, and same thing with NCAA baseball regionals and times and all the things that go on. I can guarantee you that ESPN said, hey, here's who we want to play, and that's it.
They took the three big –
and then the rest of them, just match them up here. This one we don't have, let's just put them with them.
Yeah, scheduling priority matchups for Duke and UNC and Louisville felt like, because those are your preseason top 10, top 15.
And then Florida Duke. ACC we want to make sure those teams play together.
Sure.
Other than that, let's make Cal play –
Arkansas.
Louisville.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Cal's got, Arkansas, Louisville.
Let's go do that.
Tennessee, Syracuse, Syracuse.
Yeah. There's nothing else.
Beyond UNC, Kentucky, Arkansas, Louisville, and Florida Duke, it's a lot of matchups that don't really make it. No. And those three matchups make sense because those are highly ranked teams from both conferences. Beyond that, it just feels like they just reached into the Scrabble bag,
just,
right?
Just pulled, here's an SEC, here's an ACC.
Reached into the bag and pulled out tiles. Yeah. You don't know what it's going to say.
Hey, they want to do that? Do that as a made-for-TV event.
Absolutely. That would be fun.
Do it. That'd
be
fun. We're going to have a lottery.
A lottery for
SEC, ACC. Right.
Do you like Scrabble tiles?
An SEC team's going to be at home.
Yes. And you could do it on both networks at the same time.
And they're going to be playing. Yeah, they'll be hosting.
Oh, it would be huge.
What else are those networks showing right now?
Nothing.
Interrupt the debate.
Interrupt the True South reruns of them going to some general store.
Rerun of the Around the Horn finale that they're
Yeah, no, you put those things on the go. Okay,
for the fourth hour.
Here's the SEC school. It is Kentucky.
Yeah.
All right, now roll it up. Here's the ACC school and have a lot of it.
I'd watch.
It don't matter. It would be great.
That would be fun. All right, we'll get to our final break of hour number one. Stick with us here on the Wednesday Drive.
The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck.
Jonathan here.
Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. Final few minutes here on this Wednesday. And yes, today the SEC, the ESPN releasing time frames for games. Whether a game is early, which would mean an 11 or 12 o'clock start, an afternoon start, which means 2:30 or 3:30, an evening, which means 6 o'clock and beyond. And, Jason, it looks pretty favorable for Auburn when I look at where the times are. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, there are just two early games, only one early home game, and that's South Alabama. And then the Arkansas game is an early game on the road, and that's never a concern to be playing early on the road.
Yeah, no, you're looking, you're right. Flex Oklahoma, which means either from 2:30 to 7 o'clock, basically, is what it is. That's your first one. A&M is afternoon, so you're going 2:30 or 3 o'clock.
That's fine.
Georgia night game at home, Alabama Flex, which means it's going to be 230 CBS. Or not, ABC. Excuse me, ABC now. But then, yeah, you're Mercer, 1 o'clock. And honestly, that time of year for a Mercer game, I think that's a great time.
Yeah, that's
time.
November 22nd, right?
That is the yeah. That is week 13. Yeah, I think that's a perfect. 1 o'clock game in that late in the season is perfect at Vandy afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And then Kentucky Flex at home. So you're talking about 2:30 or night game.
Again, that's at home, so you're not getting the early,
yep,
early
same
start
thing,
at home.
Same thing in Missouri. And so, yes, it could not have had much better. Yeah, South Alabama at home is the only early game that you have really on the entire schedule. That's it, right?
Yeah, so, I mean, again, we've talked about, look, Auburn appears to have the talent to be able to compete. I think they have the schedule and the timing of these
and
sets up pretty well. I
mean, 11:45 SEC Network instead of 11 a.m.
That's right.
Yes, yeah, so you
it's got not even 11.
Not even quite at 11, yes.
So, I mean, the toughest thing is that that first five games
the Oklahoma,
with road games, Baylor, A&M, and Oklahoma.
Yeah, the Oklahoma, Texas A&M back-to-back.
Right. That is your toughest road trip.
Yep. The SEC, Auburn has the SEC former Big 12 challenge going on with Baylor, Oklahoma,
that's
Texas
right.
A&M all the first 5 weeks of the season on the road. Yeah, it's difficult. Hey, it's a difficult situation for them from a travel standpoint, obviously competition standpoint. It's a difficult situation even for folks like us because I'm looking at how do you make those trips to Oklahoma City. Do you fly? Do you go and stay out there for a week, come back? Because that's not the cheapest place to get to. Houston's easy. Oklahoma City, not quite as easy.
Jason, always great to have you in. You're going to take off a little time?
Yeah, so I'll be out next week and then be back the week after next.
All right.
Yeah.
As we said, though, I mean, there's still plenty going on there at Auburn Undercover.
Yeah, absolutely. Tons of recruiting stuff going on. Baseball portal, I'll be keeping an update on that as well. Like I said, basketball news. So, especially the next week or so, it'll be really busy. Then you'll have guys making decisions here down the road here as we get around the 4th of July.
All right, Jason, thanks again. Enjoy. Have a great break, and we'll talk to you in a couple weeks.
Appreciate it.
We're back with hour number two. Stick with us.
Big Eating in Auburn and Opelika.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in to hour number two of the Wednesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio. Our thanks to Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover, who joined us in hour number one. Hopefully you got a chance to hear Jason. If you missed any of that or any of the drive in the past, we encourage you to check out the podcast.
That's right. Podcasts of The Drive available wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Go to ESPNAU.com and use the Podcast Center or go to your favorite podcasting platform and search for The Drive with Bill Cameron. That's all presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
We talked a good bit of baseball there, which makes sense. Jason is as knows much about Auburn baseball as anybody.
It's part of the reason they use him on the broadcasts.
Well, that
sometimes.
Is exactly
yeah.
Right. He's very good at that.
Auburn
as
baseball
well.
Analyst.
Yes, but we talked to you some of the transfer portal. Auburn has added five. I believe there are four players that have entered the portal, but it appears that the rest of the underclassmen, at least at this point, appear to be coming back for Auburn for next year, which is really good news baseball-wise when you look at the freshman class and some of the sophomores that played such a big part this past year.
Yeah, the contribution Auburn got from especially true freshmen, right?
Because yes.
when you're projecting Auburn 12th in the conference in the preseason, you're not expecting this kind of production from guys that weren't playing college baseball.
No, you're not expecting three guys to hit 300.
No, and a couple of guys to make all conference, all American type consideration. And so, yeah, it's huge if you have if you have Chris and the gang back in the fold. I mean, Bub and Chase, like the whole. I mean, to have three. I mean, and again, think about the full off season they're going to get at Auburn. Like they were dealing with the adjustment from
high school,
from jumping from high school a year ago, and the thought of being able to build on. I mean, Ike Irish got better every single year, mm-hmm. and I think credits a lot of the. I mean, on top of just familiarity, credits a lot of the development at Auburn with helping him. Really can't wait to see what it could mean for these true freshmen.
Oh, no question about it. And then on the mound, Uncle Ollie called in and was excited that Dre Alvarez was going to be back. Christian Chatterton should be back. Connor Gatwood is a guy that didn't even pitch this year because of some injuries, things like that. He was the most highly touted of the freshman pitchers coming in.
The thought that Chatterton and Alvarez profile as weekend starters, you would think after a full. I mean, you want to be careful about it, but you'd think that
you only got 3 days on a weekend.
Yeah, but over the next 6 months, things can change. But I would think that both of those guys, Chatterton hit some turbulence in his last couple of starts and last couple of appearances. Alvarez was pitching as well as anyone on the team when the season ended.
His last two starts, he didn't give up a run.
Yeah, so I mean, I think it's, you don't want to just base it on but Chatterton was maybe counted on more frequently than Alvarez over the course of the whole season. So I mean, you don't want to handicap it one way or the other, but those are two guys that could battle. Look, you could have a battle to be the Friday starter between those two potentially, and the thought that you could have one or the other on Saturday or Sunday is really good news.
Yeah, now the four players that it's been reported are leaving the program, catcher Cale Strickland, and you can see that. I mean, he wasn't in line for a lot of playing time. It looked like he'd be the number two guy coming into the season with Ike being the primary catcher. Nobody expected to see Chase step up and take the job the way he did, starting 48 games at catcher, hitting around 340 all year long. But pitcher Hayden Murphy, infielder Addison Klepsch, and outfielder Cole Edwards are the players that have entered the portal for Auburn. Auburn has brought in five players. Western Kentucky right-hander Drew Whalen, he really looks like a guy that is going to figure heavily into the weekend rotation. He threw 80-plus innings this year and struck out 90 in those 80 innings, had a sub-4 ERA. Virginia Tech lefty Jake Marciano was a starter there as a freshman this past year. And then Michigan State lefty Garrett Brewer is more of a reliever, at least profiles as a reliever, along with Texas State's Ryan Farber, who, as Jason was saying, has played some infield and outfield. And then UAB transfer and Auburn native Todd Clay. So those are the players that have been added in. And it should be, should be really strong competition, and I would think Auburn primed to make another run next year.
You don't want to be frantically trying to fill a whole bunch of holes,
No.
If you go all in on a senior class and suddenly there's going to be a lot of opportunities available after the season's over, that's one thing. That wasn't the Auburn team this year. You'd like to be able to retain as much of the future mm-hmm. as possible, and it looks like that's what Bruce and his staff have done. I mean, you don't want to. You know, I mean, look, this could change. I mean, it's. What did I say, Bruce? Yeah. Butchering this. I mean, what they've done in keeping the core of a really important group of young players together. You want to be careful because the portal's still open.
Oh, that
But at the moment, it seems like they've done a good job retaining the key figures.
But that sort of gets back to what you and Jason were talking about when I came in a couple of minutes late. And one of the key things for all programs now is retention. You are limited. Again, there are no limits per sport, but there have to be ideas per sport. There have to be ballpark figures. All right, here's what we have for the university to use in its revenue sharing to try to not just bring in players, but retain players. And when you have players that have the kinds of freshman years that Auburn had this past year, it's probably going to cost you a little bit more to keep them.
Could cost you a little bit more, but I think the other understanding is that it's not as though it's the Wild West for baseball players, and every school is dealing with those same sort of budget constraints they have to figure out they have to figure out how much of the pie baseball gets, and then what you do, and a lot of those schools are figuring out which they got to retain their own players too. So I think I would think that especially in you get outside of football, men's basketball, and women's basketball, I would think that the financial incentive to leave a major like playing time's one thing, but I think it would be interesting to see how many players are making jumps from the big conferences out of financial considerations. Guys who were in line for playing time moving on and going and playing somewhere
else. Because we were hearing over the last couple of years that there were guys that were easy six-figure offers from schools, and you wonder how many of those you're going to be able to have now if the roster's expanding to 34?
Wasn't it
believed? And everybody can be full scholarship? Are you going to be able to spend that kind of money on a couple of players? It's sort of along the same lines of how do you spend $2 to $4 million on one football player if your entire budget for revenue sharing for football is fifteen million.
Right, but to have a lot of those and I feel like this is a harder thing to deal with if you're actively trying to replace a roster. To have guys in place and to have to have returning production. It's a luxury right now more than ever because if you're trying to fill a bunch of holes, I mean you're going to run into some tough questions out there on the trail.
This whole thing is it's really going to be interesting to follow and yeah, some of the questions that we were tossing out there early on, it's good luck to the CEO and to the CSC in
enforcement.
Yes.
I mean, it's going to be. They seem that the conferences and the important people seem to be, seem to have faith that you know this system could work. You know what I mean? Like I think you're hearing the right things. You're hearing optimism from ADs and from conference commissioners about this new step. I think it's fair to have questions about how they plan on enforcing it. And the question I raised in hour one, I don't know if subpoena power is
going to have anything like that.
Yeah, I don't know if they have that. And so it's a question of if you're a player and you decline to tell your school about a partnership.
Yeah, somebody comes to you, some person or company, business comes to you and they want you to be at this school and they will give you, $50,000.
Yeah. I mean I guess the question
but you don't have to do anything except come to the school. That's not what the clearinghouse is looking for. I don't think they're gonna just sign off and go, oh, that's fine. No. There needs to be some legitimate gain for the business that is spending that money. They need to be getting something from that for that name, image, and likeness.
If the clearinghouse ever finds out
about
it.
That is right.
Which to me is the more like if the player never discloses it to the school and the school never discloses it to the clearinghouse, how will the clearinghouse ever find out about it? In the first place,
the clearinghouse going to have investigators the way the NCAA did? Because if not, then it's going to be even tougher than it was for the NCAA.
Yeah,
because the schools can go, hey, we didn't know anything about that. We thought he was just here because he loved the school.
I mean, and maybe there are contingencies in place. Maybe the pressure is on the school to make sure that athletes are compliant. I don't know if discipline has been settled on here either. The CSC is going to, I mean, one would think that the most powerful thing they can do is go after eligibility and start issuing suspensions. Like one would think that's the most powerful thing.
I would guess because I can't imagine that they would have a say. Are they going to have a say in bowl games postseason?
Nope. And things like that? And they're not in position to fine athletes, obviously.
No.
So like that's not going to be a considerate. Maybe they can fine schools for having non-compliant athletes participating.
If they could suspend players or say you're ineligible to play in any of our conferences that have made this agreement, that might have some sway.
But it's still, but we still get back to how are they going to find out about
yeah,
these
that's
deals?
Right.
Like to me, that like I have far more confidence in their ability to enforce discipline on the stuff they find out about.
Yeah, oh yes.
Than I do on are they going to find out about everything or even most of what's going on? And maybe that's when you hear people saying, well, college quarterbacks are still going to get $2 million or $3 million or $4 million. I wonder how many folks are. I wonder if there's a thought that, well, you know, the clearinghouse only needs to know about the, you know, about some of what's going on. I don't know. I am, now that you've got this infrastructure in place, how you enforce the rules that you've created and how you keep everyone compliant is going to be the next big. I mean, on top of like defending it in court and like holding up, you know, your system holding up, because that's what I think a lot of people are also thinking. Like the moment the lawsuit starts, the moment the clearinghouse strikes a deal down, you're going to have several people who wanting to lawyer up and saying, "Oh, let them the player who doesn't get the deal."
It might be a little tougher though than it has been if the schools stick with the. Here's what we agreed to, and it has to be this. So that's why you can't do that.
Right. So that I feel like is easier than finding out about these deals in the first place and keeping everyone compliant on this in this new system.
Yeah, we'd love to hear from you, your thoughts on that, anything you want to talk about sports wise. We'll take a little closer look at the scheduled times that the ESPN and the SEC released today.
I mean, we'll talk about it more as the season gets going, but those first five, and especially those first three on the road, I mean, it's tough to imagine a scenario where Hugh Freeze's team is 2-3 with Georgia coming to town and everything's fine.
No,
and
you're right.
And it's smooth sailing for Auburn and everyone's – and it's tough because I don't know if you would necessarily make Auburn the favorite in any of those three games right now away from home.
No, but, probably not.
But if they go 0-3 in those three games, it feels like it's going to be a different kind of pressure on Hugh Freeze, and he's going to be coming home to play a Georgia team that's a consensus top three, top five team in everyone's
right.
eyes.
Right. All right, come on in and join us again. Hour number two of The Drive, brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. Give us a call on The Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar, 334-321-1390. Come on in and join us.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Wednesday afternoon. Bill and Dan here in the studio. Again, love for you to join in. Thoughts on anything going on in the world of sports, the game times or the game.
The windows?
Yeah, the windows. Yeah. That's what I'm looking for.
The broadcast windows.
For Auburn's and the SEC games. I think Auburn came out. Like I said a while ago, I think Auburn came out pretty well on this. We already knew the Baylor game was a 7 o'clock. A 7 o'clock game on the Friday, August 29th on Fox. Ball State, 6:30 on ESPNU. South Alabama will be an SEC network game at 11:45. That is, that's probably the one of the hotter times that Auburn will be playing. But I mean, the thing is, Auburn's got most of their road games aren't late. And most of the home games aren't early,
although,
and that's what you want.
Oklahoma could be flexed to 6 to 8, right?
It could be. I said most.
Yeah, you could have the Oklahoma game at
the
Saturday
latest
night.
Road game that we know of. That could be it. Oklahoma is the only road game, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Oklahoma's the only road game that could be at night other than Baylor.
Right. So you could open on the light, you know, under the lights in your first two. Baylor and Oklahoma, your first two road games. Looks like A&M's going to be a middle
A&M
of the day.
A&M is an afternoon game, yeah. So it'll be a 2:30 to 3:30 start.
Right. So I mean, and that'll be you know, I think that's it's it, I don't know if the times really change the outlook of the game too much.
Not much,
but I think there's probably a favorable.
Later the game, the more hostile the crowd generally
is. Sure. And the rule of thumb is that if you're on the road, you'd like to play early, and if you're at home, you'd like to play late to sort of get the fans into it. And I think Auburn with – I mean, look, you knew you were going to – I think that no matter when they play the games, you're going to face down tough crowds in those three road games. Mm-hmm. Baylor at night on a Friday night thinking they can beat an SEC team.
Yeah, Oklahoma afternoon or night.
Auburn's first ever visit, and Jackson Arnold, the former Oklahoma quarterback, coming back to Norman. And then A&M, considering the game last year, you know they're going to want to avenge the loss to Auburn. So,
hey, we were talking about it during the break, and you'd said, and you're absolutely right. If Auburn's 2-3 with Georgia coming in, that's not good. That's not where you want to be. Auburn, I mean, and Auburn probably, I would say they aren't the favorite right now in any of those three ball games, but. I think Auburn is more talented than Baylor. I think Auburn's more talented than Oklahoma. And Auburn beat A&M last year. So, I mean, there's no reason they can't win. I'm not saying they should win all of those games. I think they could win any of those games.
You'd be disappointed by a 2-3 start.
Disappointed. Yeah. It would be disappointing if Auburn loses all three of those games. Yes, very.
A 2-3 start would be even considering that these are three games away from home.
I think Auburn should be 3-2 or 4-1.
Sure. And if you're either of those with Georgia coming to town, you know, maybe you feel like, you know, depending on how those games went, maybe you feel like you've got a shot.
Well, I think if you're 4-1, you probably feel pretty good that you're getting Georgia coming in, depending on how those, you know, how you got to 4-1.
Sure.
And if you're
2-4 with Georgia coming, if you're 2-3 with Georgia,
coming in, you're in trouble. I mean,
like the Music Man.
Have to win that one. I mean, because the schedule is more manageable in the second half with Missouri at home before you go to Arkansas, then Kentucky at home before you go to Nashville, then Mercer and Alabama. I mean, it's much more manageable, but I mean,
you got a chance to pick up some steam in the second half of the season. You just have to still be on the tracks.
That's exactly right. You have to avoid disaster in the first half.
Yeah, the ditch, right? Because if you're in the ditch after six games, it's going to be tough to rally the troops, and it's going to be.
That's why Baylor is huge.
Yep, absolutely.
Huge game. 334-321-1390. Let's get to the drive hotline.
Pat is on the phone.
Hey, Pat.
Hey, guys. Y'all were talking about. I personally, I think if we go 2-3. I think we're not, you know, we're not.
Nobody's happy. Nobody's happy, Pat.
I'm just saying, I don't think we're going to win more than six games because, I mean, that means we're just not.
Oh, you're probably right. If you come out of Georgia 2-4, it's hard to say. Oh yeah, we're going to win five games in the second half.
I was on the Doug show the other day, and they were talking about the over under being 7.5 for Auburn, and it's like with a team this talented and all this exciting, you know, of course Auburn should do better than Auburn should get to 8-4 or better in the regular season. It's like, well, not so fast. I mean, you got three road games where right now it's a coin flip or even, you know,
yeah, Auburn's it's not three road games like Georgia, no. Texas and, you know, something like that.
No, it's not. But it's three road games that, you know, where it's close, but maybe you'd say advantage opponent even if it's close right now. And then Bama and Georgia at home, and it's like you got to win one of those five to run the table in the rest to go 8-4. So it's, I mean, there's a path for Auburn to do considerably better than they've done in the first 2 years of the freeze era.
It's time to do what you should do. Auburn should have won 7 or 8 games last year. I mean, it shouldn't be that hard for a team this talented to win 7 or 8 games this year. That's why they have to do it.
Yeah, well, I just think with quarterback with having Jackson Arnold in the wide receivers, I just don't see how we're just gonna drop all those games. I just if that's the case, then we need to move on.
Yes, absolutely, you're right.
I think you know what, Pat. I didn't phrase it exactly like that, but it's kind of unspoken, and you just went ahead and said it. And I think you're right.
I think you're right.
I don't know what kind of enthusiasm there will be, even with all the circumstances. I don't know what kind of enthusiasm there will be if you're talking about 2-3 or 2-4 in your first five or your first six.
I don't see that. I think 4-2. I'm gonna be disappointed. But I wanted to ask you. Y'all brought something up yesterday. So this collective bargaining thing, I'm trying to understand. Mm. So you're saying that when that Auburn had a chance to argue, because I mean I like, you know, it's part of like working contracts and, you know, making deals like Trump does, whatever. But it's all about leverage, and I don't understand why it would not have been just a fair thing to say. It's like, hey, look, if you want to spend, you know, $17,000 on football, I mean $17 million, no. And you want to spend $15 million on basketball, and you want to spend $10 million on baseball, and just put a maximum on each one. And if a school wants to spend $65 million on all of their programs or whatever for the whole university, why does the NCAA care? You capped the football, you capped the basketball, and you capped the baseball, and that's it. And
well, you capped everything by saying $20.5 million. So, the problem is, there are schools out there that are in your conference, in your league, that don't want to go that high. They can't go that high, and that's why they didn't do it.
And also,
they don't have to.
Oh, I know.
That's the key. You don't have to go that high. You can spend it if you want to, but you don't have to spend it. But the max you can spend is $17 million on football, and that way
they,
you don't
they
have.
They should
one
have said a
up.
Minimum as opposed right. to the cap. They should have said every school must spend, but then you even have other schools that can't spend.
There are conferences outside of the power conferences. I know the American, the AAC, they're not requiring everyone to spend the $20.5 million. But if you want to stay in good standing in that conference, you have to spend at least 10 in total sports. They have like a floor that mm-hmm. they're mandating.
I think it'd been better to have a floor than a ceiling.
The other schools are all saying like you got to hit the $20.5 million. But Pat, you bring up a good point, which is. Like it sounds like there was opposition to per sport caps, and maybe some of that opposition came from programs that plan on outspending everyone in men's basketball or in baseball.
Yeah, but say you're Florida, you've got more than $20.5 million to spend, and you want to win everything. You don't want Kentucky to say we're going to spend $1 million less on football, because Florida didn't want to spend $1 million less on football, but they want to spend that extra $1 million on basketball.
I think the $20.5 million number might have been a compromise with some of the smaller conferences of the smaller programs. Like the reason that number is not higher right now, it's going to increase every
year.
It's
supposed to go up to $30 million by the time the deal's done in 10 years.
I thought the whole purpose of this was to cap it, not to make you spend it.
Well, schools wanted there to be some type of cap so that they could – it wasn't crippling them financially. So they needed some kind of cap. But I do think the $20.5 million seems like there are quite a few of the big-timers that's not going to break them at all.
The reason some of the smaller conferences have floors and are saying you have to spend at least $10 million is because they don't want a situation where you have some schools in the conference just collecting their conference broadcast deals and not spending and not competing in sports, but still collecting their check every year.
Okay, then you could easily do that, but just do what I said. You can max out at 17, 15, 10, or whatever on each sport, and that for a max of 65, but you have to spend at least 10. Why would you want? I don't understand why anybody, like you said, Florida, Auburn, that's just multi-schools like LSU, why would anybody ever want to take that deal? That just is horrible for basketball, because we're going to get $4 million for our basketball team. I mean, I just don't understand why would we want to agree to that? It seems like they want us to get in it. Why would we not have any leverage to make it to where it's fair? Because anybody complaining about, oh, well, you could spend 15, well, so do you. If you want to, you can. Do it. If you don't want to, you don't have to. I don't understand why, but you have to spend 10 overall on all your sports, whatever, that's great. But I don't understand what the purpose of making it where every sport has to be included in that. I don't understand what is wrong with capping each sport at a high number where everyone is on the same level. Everyone in basketball can spend $15 million, period.
Yeah, have a higher salary cap, because you look in professional sports, they don't have a low cap. I mean, they have a really high end cap. And look, there's a tremendous amount of difference in what the cheapest and the teams that spend the most. There's a ridiculous difference between those. what you're trying, what they seem to be trying to do in college sports is keep everybody in the same ballpark.
Pat, I'm thinking that the number, the $20.5 million, is a compromise. There are probably some programs that were willing to. I mean, look, Ohio State and Texas. Like, I guarantee
and
you,
A&M would probably jump in there too and say, we'll spend $50
million. Yeah. Easy. I mean, if you, Duke, I mean, there are places that'll say, yeah, if you want to go to, I mean, BYU just spent $6 million on a true freshman basketball player. Like, there are some schools that would have been willing to go to 30 or 40 or 50. I think there are also some schools and some conferences that would get real nauseous at those numbers because their team would be a tenth of the price of their opponents potentially.
Who in the SEC couldn't do that, do you think?
Ooh. Would be happier with
look, it's going to break us. We just can't do it.
I mean, maybe
but you don't have to spend the money on the other schools. You can spend the money on the other sports. If you want to be good in one sport, you can pick it. But you don't get to spend more than what the other schools are probably going to end up spending.
Hey, Pat, I would rather it be that way and not what we're talking about, worrying about what's going under the table. I mean, if you kept it, it would keep it much more above board if you said, all right, here's what it can be. You can spend that. And we'll know that quarterback A is getting $2.5 million this year.
And an athletic department cap, I think, probably discourages schools from trying to compete in every sport. Right, because you also you sort of encourage schools to pick a lane, pick a sport, and be great in that, and prioritize it. And I think a per sport cap, as opposed to a total athletic department cap, would maybe alleviate some of that. Because we don't know what kind of infighting's happening in athletic departments right now.
No, we don't.
You know, between like there's four or five coaches that expect to be able to compete at Texas or at Tennessee, Florida, or at LSU or at Florida, where it's like they all expect to be near the top of the league. And there's going to be some behind the scenes knife fights, you know, for some of this money.
Think about this: you got UConn. Okay, UConn spending $10 million on their coach, so clearly they're going to spend $20 million on their basketball program because that's what they want to win. They want to win that. Okay, if you're Dallas Baptist, you know, I'm assuming they're in Dallas. Yeah. They're probably rich as can be. Why would they not want to spend $20 million on baseball? Are you telling me if they went out and got nine baseball players that all got $3 million each, that are $2 million each, $2,500,000, that they wouldn't be able to get the best guys to go there? Why was that? And I don't think Dallas Baptist would care. They would love it. But you just created a very uneven playing field in the sports.
Hey Pat, how about Gonzaga? Like you think Gonzaga's worried about
anything else?
Dropping $20 million on anything but the best possible men's basketball team. No, my suspicion is that if this plays out the way we are afraid it might, then you could have some folks after a year or 2 years saying, "Hey, emergency, you know, let's fix this."
Are they going to have to take it up? I mean, is there a guarantee that they're going to even be able to do it? I mean, it sounds good. We'll just change the rule. Well, if they don't like it, well, they won't let us do it now. They wouldn't let us do it the fairway to start with. We couldn't. So why are they going to agree? Okay, yeah, now that we're winning, we're going to let you change it.
Well, it seems like everyone at the moment seems to think this is a good idea, at least, you know, of the people in power.
Yeah, we haven't started yet.
Yeah,
so.
So I think the moment like public opinion or even the tide internally starts to turn, I think you could start having some talk of renegotiation or of because you're right. I think a per sport cap probably would make more sense, allowing schools to pick the sports where they want to hit the number as opposed to a flat number that your athletic department has to hit
or if you only need one player, you can spend more money to make your team be great that year. So you'd go over what you probably would normally spend. I mean, it just seems like this is creating a chaos in the pursuit of a level playing
field.
But you know something, none of us know. Nobody, none of us. I'm sure somebody, Greg Sankey, and maybe the athletic departments have a clue.
The new CEO.
What their guys are all making now.
Yeah.
Because you don't know. We're just hearing that this guy's getting this and another one's getting that. You have really no idea exactly what the payroll has been for SEC football teams and basketball teams and baseball teams. That's what doesn't make sense. It doesn't sound like Well, the payroll sounds like it's been about $40 million, and we're going to say we're going to cap it at $20 million. That is when you're really asking for lawsuits.
Lawsuits and or folks not following the rules to keep that money flowing as it's flown in the past.
Yeah, no, I agree. I guess it just seems to be like this has got a lot of problems in the, I mean, that are going to come up. And if, you know, what's the point of even going to basketball if UConn and Gonzaga are going to spend $20 million every year? There's no way we're going to be able to get players.
Yeah, I mean, they've got a $20.5 million budget for one sport one sport. And you've got to fund football before you even think about that sport.
Well, Kevin Willard was the head coach at Maryland, and he left for Villanova.
And people went, why?
And it's like, why would the head coach of a Big Ten school leave for Villanova? And he mentioned in the press conference, Villanova doesn't have a bowl subdivision football team, and so they've got more resources to dedicate to recruiting in men's basketball through this new agreement. And it feels like that's contrary to the spirit of what they were trying to do.
I would sure think.
All right, thanks, guys.
Appreciate the call, Pat. All right, we're running way behind. Got to get to our bottom of the hour break. Plenty of time for you to join us here on the Wednesday Drive.
BNAU.com.
Welcome back in. Final 20 minutes or so here of the Wednesday Drive with Bill and Dan. Really interesting conversation with Pat that we were having, and it does. It brings up a couple of things. I was telling you, I was on with the Sandersons do Wednesday morning, a little bit with them on Wednesday mornings up in Tuscaloosa, and one of the things they were questioning was how, you know, we had heard that players needed to go ahead and sign up for lucrative deals before this new agreement came into place. And one thing that was brought up this morning is, what about the possibility of multi-year deals? I wonder, I mean, if deals that had been put in place that didn't have to be approved by the clearinghouse now are still good, How long can they run?
I don't know the answer. I would be skeptical of multi-year deals getting to like pass the smell test there, but the fact that deals that were in place before July 1st
right
are seemingly exempt
they're not going to have to go through the clearinghouse.
I think that it's as of now. I believe over the weekend.
As a matter of fact, it was as of June
7th or 8th, there was, starting that day, any new deal over $600 had to pass the clearinghouse. But no, your question's a good one of what do you do with multi-year deals and what do you do with the
then would they get the revenue sharing on top of that? And I would think that from this point on that would be the case. But for players that already had those lucrative deals, they might, the schools might say, hey, you have that. It's either that or revenue sharing. And you take your pick.
Pat said he had one more point to make. So let's get Pat back. What's up, dude?
Yeah. Hey. This just something else just got on my mind now. Okay. So if you're Bruce Pearl or you're the guy from Florida, or you're the guy from North Carolina, or whoever, why wouldn't you go to Gonzaga?
We just saw Maryland lose their coach to Villanova for these reasons, right? Like if it's not going to be a level playing field, then yeah, what's going to stop the, I mean, if Kentucky is looking for a coach, wouldn't it be an important selling point if they're going to spend more on men's basketball than anyone else in the conference and they're deciding who? I mean, Kentucky has Mark Pope, and they seem pretty happy. But I would think there are some places. Mm-hmm. Kentucky and Arkansas are the places I keep thinking about. Maybe Vandy, maybe State, where it's like, would you be willing to carve a little bit of that money away from football and throw it to men's basketball without making waves? And would that make it a more attractive job than it's been historically if you decided as a department to do that?
Well, I'm just saying if you're a coach and you want to win it all. You better have
as many resources as the best team you're going to compete against.
Yeah, so
you better be in that ballpark.
Coach, Yeah, I mean, I think you're going to end up losing the best coaches in the league at the schools like LSU and Auburn and Florida and Texas and Texas A&M. I mean, you're going to lose those coaches because I mean, yeah, you're getting paid money, but you can get paid the same amount of money with where you got $20 million to spend on the NIL. It's going to cause more of a problem than I think we realize.
You had four teams in the Elite Eight this year from the SEC, and I think all four of them are schools that care about football: Auburn, Alabama, Tennessee, and Florida.
Yeah,
right?
I think that's a pretty safe,
going to be hard. It seems like not impossible. It's going to be harder than ever to win at that level in men's basketball while fielding a competitive football.
Yes.
Game. Not impossible, harder than ever before, because now you're almost directly fighting for the same resources.
Unless you do break away from those schools that don't have football. I mean, if you're in a group that has like sports, that has the same sports, then hey, it's up to you if you want to spend a little more or a little less. But nobody would have that huge advantage. So
when you start
think that may be the simplest solution. That's where we're headed next. We're headed to the super conferences, yep.
or at the very least,
or
a
different conference, if you will,
or a different number,
60 to 80 schools.
I would even say a different number for your revenue sharing if you're not fielding a bowl subdivision football team. Like, it's one number for the places, for the 130-something schools that are in the bowl subdivision, maybe there's one number, and there's a...
And the 300-plus that are in the basketball?
That are D1 in every D1 and everything else. I wonder if it's maybe a different number for those, to factor in the fact that they're not fielding a bowl...
Cap them at something in the $5 million range.
Because you're right. I mean, right now, a Gonzaga or a Big East team that cares about basketball.
It'd be crazy to see a postseason basketball tournament that didn't include schools like Gonzaga.
Yeah, it would be disheartening to see like an Elite Eight that's nothing but the schools that have drastically prioritized men's basketball over everyone else.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you have those.
I mean, that's not that impossible to imagine if they're able to spend, you know, four times as much.
No, it's not. I mean, and even we talked about like the schools outside the major conferences, you know, your Big East schools or Gonzaga or something, but it's like even in the SEC or the Big 12 or the Big 10, right? You have.
Yeah. But when you do have a hard limit for all your sports and everybody has the same number of sports, then sure, it's up to you. If you do want to spend that extra million and slide a couple of hundred grand from one to another.
I sort of
like that. I think that makes it much more interesting than schools that don't even field a football team having that extra $15 million.
I'd love to know what kind of conversations are happening behind the scenes, right? You've been part of departments fighting over resources before.
But it was nothing like this.
There was
never anything like this going on. That was 30 years ago. So, yeah, no kidding. All right, we'll get to our final break of the afternoon. Stick with us. We're having fun here on the Wednesday Drive.
Coming in August of 2025 to Casita, Alabama, it's Clubs and Hatchets, a fun and relaxing
minutes of the Wednesday Drive. Yeah, I mean, that's really interesting conversation. We don't have answers. I hope that the commissioners and ADs feel like they have more answers than I'm sure they do than we do. But I mean, it's really interesting as we head into this, just wondering exactly how this is going to be handled. How are they going to be able to really make sure that people are abiding by, you know,
I mean, they're
ta- by
I mean,
the
they're,
rules?
They're taking steps. They've hired the former Major League Baseball executive to run the CSC, and they seem to think that they're gonna have a leg up on enforcement and compliance. And I think it's just a matter of seeing if it flies.
Yeah.
They built the thing and they've driven it to the cliff, and now let's see what happens.
As we were saying with Pat though there at the end, I mean, I really think the simplest next step would be just breaking away from those schools that don't field the same sports. I mean, basically become the Power Four or whatever.
A super conference,
right,
or some sort of breakaway, you know, featuring the largest, which is,
I mean, that's been talked about for years.
Yeah, and the fact that you've got the major conference commissioners on the board of the CSC, I feel like could make it easier than ever before for them to band together and make some sort of decision like that. And, I mean, it would be bad for the mid-major class. It would probably be bad for anyone who doesn't field a bowl subdivision football team in one of those leagues. But they've shown a willingness to they've shown a willingness to act in their own best interests,
right,
and not necessarily have everyone's, you know, the thought of what's best for all the D1 programs in mind. And I don't know if it's the job of a conference commissioner to prioritize.
Don't worry about other people. You better worry about your own.
Best for that's Greg Sankey will tell you it's not his job to.
No, you're right about that.
To steward the industry, just make the best deal possible for the SEC.
You know, they could a way that they could do it where it wouldn't all be on them is the next thing that the commissioners could decide. The Power Four commissioners could go, oh yes, and we're going to and we are going to put a cap on non-football sports.
Well,
that you can't spend more than 40% on non-football.
When we get into, I guess in December, we will have like the first football portal of the of the revenue sharing era, and we'll see if it slows things down, if it speeds things up, or if
it's hard to imagine it's going to speed it up.
Yeah, and it's already at terminal velocity. Probably It's already about as fast as it can go. But it's and yeah, who are the movers and shakers? Who are the players when schools go shopping in December to fit this budget?
Where are the players heading? All right, fun show today. Tomorrow, let's see.
No Ferg, I don't think. I think that's why he was in earlier in the house. Maybe we gotta get with the coach at some point tomorrow or Friday. Jake on Friday.
I can check. You want to see if he can come in?
Yeah,
come
if he
in
wants both. To. If he wants to pop
I'm
in.
Out Friday.
That's right.
And we'll make up for Jake on Friday while I'm out. Right.
That's right. We will have Jake. Scheduling conflict yesterday, so we will have Jake in the 5 o'clock hour on Friday, talking about all the stuff going on in the world of sports. Might do a little college baseball, a little college World Series previewing with Jake as they get started in Omaha in a couple of days.
Well, that's going to wrap things up for the Wednesday Drive. Our thanks to Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover joining us, and you, our listeners and callers as well. But that'll do it for today. We're back tomorrow. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.
Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying, skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.